हरि ॐ सहना ववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तमविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 6, Chapter 87, Canto 10. The conditioned souls are generally put into the activities of the material world for sense gratification. Therefore, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, to regulate those who are very much addicted to different kinds of sense gratification, the worship of demigods is sometimes recommended. For example, for persons very much addicted to meat eating, the Vedic injunction recommends that after worshipping the form of goddess Kali and sacrificing a goat, not any other animal, under Karmakanda regulation, the worshippers may be allowed to eat meat. Right? Because see, it's still going to be regulated, they still have to follow the rules, they still have to make an offering, so they still have to follow all the procedures that would be there if they weren't meat eaters. But in a context that matches that. Right? So as they get purified, now they still know as they eat according to, they eat what's left from sacrifice. Right? And then according to sacrifice, it's defined what is offerable in sacrifice. Does that make sense? You know, so then it all... Huh? You understand? So that's the advantage of the Vedic system. Even if you're dealing with somebody who's very materialistic, still, the overall concept and principles of why they have to do things is the same as if they're following in the mode of goodness. So whether in their passion or ignorance, it's still, the principles of it are the same. Right? Because the goodness ones are based on what is useful in bhakti. So those principles have to remain the same, like surrender to guru, accepting scripture as authority, regulation of their lifestyle. Right? Means eating only what's offered in sacrifice. Does that make sense? You know, distributing charity, serving guests, all these different things they'll be doing, but the methods that they go about it will be different. Does that make sense? Let us say you have somebody, even if taking, let's say, a Western example. Somebody who, you know, they're a good host. So people come to their house, you know, they greet them properly, you know, they go to the door, invite them in, you know, see that they, whatever it is, whatever is required for the situation, you know, of, you know, in the foyer of coats or this or that or whatever it is. Oh, that's there, they bring them in, they sit them down like that, they get things for them to, you know, drink or eat or whatever appropriate for the things, or if there's meals, or, you know, they'll be looking after them, right? And so, and for this, it's just part of their lifestyle, that's how they do. Okay? Now, they take up Krishna consciousness. Are they going to have a problem receiving people that come to the temple, preaching to them, sitting them down, getting them some water, some prasad, or anything like that? Not at all. Now if it's, you know, you kind of guy, you're slouched on the couch, and you know, the guy's coming over, you know, and he knocks on the door, there's no answer, but, you know, because of the nature of the culture, then, okay, he cracks the door, but, hey, anybody home? Yeah, come on in. You know, and so you come in and like that, and then he goes to sit down, you know, because not you tell him, or you might, or just whatever it is, you just sit somewhere because he's already sprawled on the couch, so you sit on the other side or on the chair, and then, you know, he's drinking his beer. He says, yeah, beer's in the fridge, take what you want, you know, like that. So now this person, when they become a devotee and people come to the temple, are they going to be inclined to take care of them?
Definitely.
No. You understand? That's the advantage of the Vedic culture, is the same culture that you would use in devotional service, that is the Vedic culture. Now, the ingredients you will use, that may change. You know, from some rope, you know, from, how you say, some beer to some rose sarbat or something. You know, but the point is it's the principle is the, remains the same. Right? Because you have to remember, in the material, you have eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, right? That goes on in every culture, every society. They don't leave any one of these four out. So it's just a matter of then, what is the nature of that? In a sense. So like that, then the whole culture, the economics, the political, all these different things, educational, that if you have a founding, and especially in the Vedic, then it's so easy to practice the devotional activities. Does that make sense? Right? So that's always there. Just like, let us say, you can say now, I can't say what it was after some time, but it's just a traditional thing in India, people get up early. How early? But at least they're up early. Generally, you know, before the sun comes up and all that, they take the bath and that. It doesn't matter. They're, you know, what is their position and everything. They do that, right? So now, and at the same time as the lifestyle, the regulated and all that, they don't go to bed early. You know, so let's say, you know, a standard thing would be to go to bed 10, 11 at night, get up at 4 or 5 in the morning. It's just everybody does it, from the kids up to the adults, everybody. It's just what they do. So now when they come to Krishna consciousness, for them the concept of getting up early is easy, because you go to bed a touch earlier, so getting up a little bit earlier is easier. You know what I'm saying? It's not a problem for them, because that concept is there. If they're tired, they don't think morning is the time to sleep. You know what I'm saying? That's not how it works. So they won't have any difficulty. You know, so I was always amazed that, you know, you go to Chopati and they have their programs until 11, 12 midnight, and at 5 o'clock they're all there at Mangal Arati, you know, the same guys, you know. And then they also prefer to sit while they're chanting, because I think there's too many of them, because the temple's too small. If they all walk on that, then it'll be crazy. So everybody just sits and chant. So the whole place is just packed with everybody sitting and chanting. This is after being at a program until 11 o'clock, 12 at night, and getting up, you know, for being there for the Mangal Arati. And they don't fall asleep. Right? Because that's the lifestyle. You don't sleep at that time of the day. If you're tired, you sleep another time. You know? Like that. Does that make sense? So it's just the habit. But if you come from a culture where if you're tired, you sleep, then it's a big problem. Like, I remember, I was in Los Angeles. I visited Los Angeles, like, yeah, probably the first and last time since I became a devotee, right? So, like that. And then I was commenting to them that I don't remember it being so cold in the morning, and, you know, because I'd lived in LA, like, why it was so cold in the morning? And the devotee just looked at me and laughed, you know? Because I said, I lived here and this and that. He just looked at me and laughed. He says, that's because you probably never got up before 9 in the morning. So by 9 o'clock, you know, it's like here. It'll be cold in the morning. By 9 o'clock, it's warm. So LA is the same. It's cold in the morning. By 9 o'clock, it's warm. And then I said, oh, yeah, right. You understand? So then it's hard, this early getting up. So that's the thing, is that that's the advantage of the Vedic culture, is you're already doing those things that are the lifestyle of someone who is a devotee, even if you're not. So the Vedic system is done in such a way that all of these people are up early. There's no such thing as even those in the mode of ignorance. They're all up in the Brahma Muhurta. They may be worshipping Kali or doing some weirdo stuff, but they're up. Doesn't matter who they are. That's the time for puja. That's just when you have it. Does that make sense? You know, so it works. It's already part of the scene. You know, or in the evening after the work, the day, you know, the sun gone down, it's cooled down, everyone gets together, that's when they all sit, they all talk, they all eat, they all, you know, whatever they're doing. Right? Because that's the time when you get together, you associate in that, because the morning is for puja, the day is for work, the evening is for the social. Standard Indian stuff. It's just everybody does it. So then you'll see the interesting things. Then in the morning, then in the temple, you know, Westerners are there, if they are there, then they're enthusiastic and Mangalarti. The Bengalis are quite meditative and all that, you know, like that. Then they do the service during the day. Then the evening, when the Westerners are all kind of like falling off and get into doing their own thing, Bengalis get together and have these big, huge kirtans, and they all sit there for the classes, and then they all go and take the shot. And, you know, so it's just, the lifestyle is easy for them. Right? Have you ever gone to evening arti? It's just all the... Just, okay. But have you ever stayed and seen the class afterwards when they all sit down?
Yeah.
Super amazing. Peaceful. You know, everyone's focused. Very calm. Like this. Really amazing. Yeah, that's there, but it still doesn't have the same mood as the evening. Evening is so pleasant. You know, they'll have the evening arti, then the shringa, then they'll sit down and do bhajans. You know, a little bit, and then they'll do the class, then they'll go for the shad, you know, and then they'll go to bed, and then they're there in the morning. Right? You know, so it's just the natural thing. So that's why in the Vedic system, it's there, but you just make adjustments and you introduce elements that'll be attractive to someone in passion or ignorance. But they still follow the system. They still have guru, they still have shadu, you know, they have, you know, like shastra. They have the regulation, you know. So even if they're uncontrolled in their senses, there's control of those uncontrolled senses. You know, it's just the way it is. There's no such thing as not having any control. Right? Is that? The idea is not to encourage one to eat meat, but to allow one to insist on eating meat, to eat it under certain restricted conditions. Because after time, you get purified. Then you start to see, you know, it's not so important. Therefore, worship of the demigods is not worship of the absolute truth. But by worshiping the demigods, one gradually comes to accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead in an indirect way. At least you accept the authority and all these things like that. Then if someone points out about Krishna's position and all that, then it's just a very... a simple adjustment. This indirect acceptance is described in the Bhagavad Gita as avidhi. Avidhi means not bona fide. Since demigod worship is not bona fide, the impersonalist stressed concentration on the impersonal feature of the absolute truth. King Parikshit's question was, which is the ultimate target of Vedic knowledge, right? That's what he's trying to get at, because then, is it the impersonal or the personal? Right? Because if you can't describe Brahman through words, but we're describing Krishna through words, then who's the senior? Who's the superior? Mm-hmm. Right? So how is that? How do you deal with transcendence with words that are not seemingly transcendental? Right? It's dealing with what you're saying. Through the material intelligence, you can't understand the Lord. But we're working with material intelligence. So how does that work? This concentration on the impersonal feature of the absolute truth, or which is the ultimate target of Vedic knowledge. This concentration on the impersonal feature of the absolute truth, or concentration on the personal feature. After all, both the impersonal and personal feature of the Supreme Lord are beyond our material conception. The impersonal feature of the absolute, the Brahman effulgence, is but the rays of the personal body of Krishna. These rays of the personal body of Krishna are cast all over the creation of the Lord. That means it's the whole thing. It's not just here in the material world. It's everywhere. Right? Like that. And the portion of the effulgence which is covered by the material cloud is called the created cosmos of the three material qualities, sattva, rajas, and tamas. So the Brahman effulgence is everywhere. And part of that is covered by the cloud of ignorance. Brahman's still there. It still functions, but you don't see it. Does that make sense? It's not appreciated. So through ignorance, then one sees.
And then the question arises, how can material cover Brahman?
How could... How can persons who are within this clouded portion called the material world conceive of the absolute truth by the speculative method? Because how do you understand the sun if there's clouds? Right? You can speculate what it is, but how you'll understand? Because that's the point. That's how it gets covered. Is the sun covered by the clouds? No, we're covered by it. So. Okay, we're good? Sukadeva Goswami said, the Supreme Lord manifested the material intelligence, senses, mind, and vital air of the living entities so that they could indulge their desires for sense gratification, take repeated births to engage in fruitive activities, become elevated in future lives, and ultimately attain liberation. Right? So they could come with that idea, using their material intelligence, mind, and senses, and all their energies, to engage themselves in sense gratification. By this way, take birth after birth. After a while, think that this is starting to get stupid. Then they're going to start to elevate themselves. Then they're going to come to the plot, you know, through proper activity. Then they're going to see even that's a problem. Then they're going to go for liberation. Right? So they'll get out of the material world. But if they want a permanent solution, then it must be bhakti. Because that's real liberation. The other is that's not actually real liberation. You know, it's like a king for a day, you know. That's not real, you know, royalty, right? So, you know, yeah. Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates. Faults cannot be ascribed to the Vedas as with the meaning of ordinary words, since the Lord who is beyond matter is the subject of the Vedas. Since the very intent of the Vedas is to point out his supreme position, since he alone is to be known by the Vedas, and since he is thus the obvious object proved by the Vedas, the Shrutis say this, Twayi hi falan chyatan nira sanena bhavan ni dhanaha. The Shrutis followed their method of eliminating everything separate from the Supreme, becoming successful by revealing you as their final conclusion. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:87-41. Right? So then they showed what's not the Supreme. That's one way to do it. Mm-hmm. And then you'll be left with the Supreme. So we use a more direct method. We show what's the Supreme and then show what's not connected. So it's the same process, but the other one, you have to have great focus and great intellectual prowess to go through what everything is not. Then finally what's left, then you see is the Supreme. Right? While the others, you know what's Supreme, you know what you're going for, then you go through and show what's not. Because, you know, we see some people how much they can handle what it's not. Right? Yes.
We see practically by negation in the material world, we can't actually come to the conclusion what's supreme, because it's like you negate everything and what's there, it's like nothing.
Yes, but that's why then with the Vedic conclusions, then you can start to see that there are some verses left. You know, some indication of the supreme. So it's not all the Karmakanda, it's not the Jnanakanda, it's not the Upasana, it's about the Supreme Lord. So it means all the activities described, then it's only the ones connected to the Lord. That's of value. All the knowledge that's there and all the speculation, it's only what's connected to the Lord. And all the worship, that's what's connected to the Lord. Mm-hmm. So that's the meaning, is that you're starting with the Vedic version and then from that stripping back to what's the essence. Doesn't mean things are given up. It just means that you know what the purpose is of something. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, let's say, you walk into the kitchen and you say, I want, you know, so cook. So now, what's your question? I just walk in and say, cook. What? Okay. Say, we say, Oliver. How much? Okay, you understand? You have to have the volume. Okay, now we know how much. What's next?
What's the
ingredient? Yes, that's because this is a practical approach. So, where's the stuff? You're the cook. Yeah, but you're the Yajman. No, but the point is, you also have to know who you're cooking for. Right? You're cooking for the deities, you'll cook it one way. If you're cooking for food for life, you might cook for another way. Right? And if you're cooking for the natural food freaks, then you'll cook it in even a different way.
Just don't cook it again.
You don't cook it at all. We thought that you'd want to eat it raw because it's so much better. We soaked it. We soaked the soup, for you and put in some, what's that called? What's that new sweetener?
Oh,
stevia. Yeah. We put in a bunch of stevia and soaked it and all that and like that. And so, enjoy. Yeah, so you have to know who it's cooked for. You understand? So that's all these different aspects of knowledge. Right, you see? So you want to know, well, what's it for? The essence is, what's it for? Why are you doing these things? Then you know that. Then you know how much to do, what exactly to do. Does that make sense? So that's the problem with the impersonalists. They just start throwing things out the window. They don't know. They don't really have a place to start from. So Shankaracharya gives them, oh, it's all Brahman, and okay, great, but still, they don't fully understand what's Brahman, because this creation is also Brahman, and they negate that. So, they can't actually end up with anything proper. That's why, it's that Mayavadis will never get liberated. Impersonalists might, but Mayavadis never will. Right? Because if you negate the person, where does Brahman come from? The person. So, therefore, you won't get to Brahman because you've negated the actual source of, or the support of, or the basis of, that's the word I think Krishna uses, the basis of Brahman. They're not getting anywhere. But they don't worry that, because that's a very, very hard path, very difficult, takes so many lifetimes for meditation and hard work. But for the Mayavadis, the highway to hell. Now that is, it's set up for big city traffic, so there's no congestion, no traffic jams, nothing. Let's see. Right? Yeah? No? Okay. Some consider the difference between Jiva and the Lord to be conditional due to upadhi. This has been discussed on the commentary regarding Brahma's prayers in the 14th chapter of this canto. This is also explained in the Sri Vaishnava commentary on the Brahma Sutras, in Satadushini, and in Tattvavada works like Vishnu Tattva, Prakashika, and Nyayamrita. Wow. I have dealt with this in detail in commentary on Bhagavat Sandarbha, which depends somewhat on their views, since the root cause of difference is ignorance. It is accepted to say that oneness of tat and tvam is realized by knowledge. One should not think, however, that existence of the jiva is somehow produced by someone's ignorance, since it is impossible for the Brahman, which is pure consciousness, to be the shelter of ignorance or to be made ignorant by something to create the jiva. Mm-hmm. Footnote 1. All materialists agree that the material energy is the origin of the jiva. Mm-hmm. That means all the material schools, only the Vaishnav schools accept that they're something else. Like that. So that one thing, that's why the discussion on the jiva and this and that is so important. Mm-hmm. Right? Because they all think they come from material energy.
Right. Yes. The six schools, among them, they all except for
Vaishnava Vedanta, even the Advaita Vedanta, will consider the jiva it comes from Padam.
And Kamala Mimasa, they also accept that?
Yeah, well, because they don't even bother to go there. Well, we're having a great time. Why wouldn't we? They consider it a waste of time to be renounced and all that. It means when you're older, and so when it's the time, like Manu says, when you go to the forest, when you do these things, then they're doing that as piety, because then that will give them greater material facilities next life. They're not doing it as you know, thing to realize the supreme and all that. They're doing it for as piety, right? Because you'll get piety, but that's not their reason. So that's why when they're young or this or that, they, you know, the means they'll go, they'll be a brahmachari because that's how you get your knowledge, and that's the pious thing. Then if you follow that, then when you get married, then things will go nicely because, you know. Previous life, you've done all your duties, then you renounced and did all those things nicely, then you took birth and proper families, and then you practiced brahmacharya, did all your study, now you're ready for the main course again, right? You know, so then that's all they do. Their idea is if you just always do pious things, do everything pious, never make any mistake, then you'll eternally enjoy. Yes, you'll take birth and this and that, but it'll be in a good family and it'll be all these things and you'll have all nice facilities and all that. Of course, they probably never discussed the story of King Riga. You know, and Krishna says in the material, every action is covered by fault. So there will be all these things. They will suffer. But because they have such a strong desire, they kind of look past that and just look at what's good. You know, it's like the donkey and the carrot. Yes.
Other religions are not so specific about
jiva,
independent
or independent. Yeah, but no. Wait. It means when you say others, you're meaning like Buddhism, Jainism, yeah. You know, how you say Shintoism or Confucianism, Taoism. You're meaning the Abrahamic.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Let's take the Abrahamic. God came along, picked up some dirt, smushed it around together like that, and made man. So, the origin of the jiva is from material energy. So it's complete. But at the same time is because they don't focus on that, it's not a big part. They're trying to go to heaven and be good and all that. That when you explain further, you give them actual knowledge. As much of what they have is a touch of goodness. There's a lot of passion. Because you do good, you do nice, you'll enjoy, you'll go to heaven. So when they're given that, then it's not that they can't see beyond that and understand it nicely. Because at least the principle that there's religion, there's God, there's some regulation, there's something you have, some ways you have to adjust your life to make God happy, so like that. It's just a matter of why you want to make God happy. Okay. One should also not think that the Lord is produced by the jiva's ignorance and is composed of material vidya. Right? Because then you're taking the point is that the personal form means Brahman is there. Brahman is covered by ignorance. That produces jivas. Then jivas in their thought, then they then have a concept of God as a person. So you have to avoid all that. No, God's a person, based on him as Brahman, then that Brahman, that is the basis of all the material creation. Mm-hmm. And then the jiva gets thrown in here because of his interest. Right? So it's all happening. He's not the subject, supposedly being a jiva, of this ignorance, or object of another jiva's ignorance. So he's not affected by ignorance, and he's not affected by anybody else's ignorance, just like the sun is unaffected by the clouds. The sun shines, does its stuff, whether, you know, an area on is covered by clouds or not. So... But this has the fault of cause producing itself, jiva causing the jiva's existence. Because that's the problem, is that, you know, because then you'll say, where does ignorance come from? Because there's only Brahman, so there can't be any ignorance. So that comes from the jiva. But how do you get a jiva? Oh, when Brahman's covered by ignorance. So we're talking about really not intelligent, not well thought out. So what is it? It's an attachment to a not particular idea. Therefore, even though this major flaw is there, they just finesse it. And they'll just green bird, green tree, and all this kind of jazz. kind of sense. Otherwise, the green bird and the green tree would merge into greenness. But no, there's a tree and there's a bird. Mm-hmm. Good? Okay. Sukadev thus says to Parikit, it is good that you have said that Bhagavan, in his full manifestation, is not impersonal. That would be known by the beginning and concluding statements of the personified Shrutis. Right, so they'll open with, he's a person, and they'll close with that. And in between, they'll discuss all the various aspects and approaches and understandings and, you know, and aspects of the Lord and all that. But they'll open and close with that. So that's the proper way. So that's what he's saying. If it's just neti, 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 and then you get to the Lord, that'll be a problem. You show that there's the Lord, then you show what's, and then you show the Lord again as the conclusion, then it works more nicely. Right? There are two types of Brahmavadis. One type says that Brahman transforms into two by ignorance, like thinking shell is silver. This was already refuted by logic with statements like Shrutestu Shabda Mulatvat, spoken by Vyasadeva. Okay, so this is in this is the one that we're on now. Okay. They are actually materialist atheists. The other type, though claiming belief in the Lord without specific bhakti, cannot accept the individual form of the Lord with eternity, knowledge, and bliss, and consider Bhagavan to be without a form. They worship him with that conception. That they realize by the Shakti given by the Lord using intelligence and senses, right? Because by the material intelligence, you can only understand the Lord up to the point of the eternal aspect, these eternal, you know, unchanging, that kind of aspect. That's it. So, because that's all they're using, that's all the farther they can get. But it's not that they're against the Lord, they just think he doesn't have a form. They accept they're supreme, but he just thinks they don't have a form. But it's not that they have any problem with the form of the Lord. Right? They just think that ultimately it's all Brahman. You know what I'm saying? But the Brahman is not, it's not, because it's not a transformation of Buddhism, of nothingness. See, that's the thing. When we say Mayavad, we say Brahman, and so everything's Brahman, we think of nothingness. Mm-hmm. Right? We don't think of just everything is Brahman. There's this high, it means there's this transcendental, you know, entity that everything is based on. And so that's, does that make sense? So when we say it's all one, and then we think of nothingness, it's actually just covered Buddhism. So it's not real. That's not the real. It's not that, oh, that is a philosophy and then there's ours. No, that's not a philosophy at all. The Vedic concept means those within it, they're still materialists, but they're not atheists. Because atheists are against the form of the Lord. They're non-theists. While the other impersonalists, they're not atheists. They're just agnostic. They just don't worry about these things. You know, it's not important to them. Because they're already absorbed in one thing. They don't care about the other thing. You know, it's like you're doing something and you're happy doing that. And they come along, hey, this is going on in the next room. You know, why don't you come? No, I'm happy. It's not that they say, oh, that's bad, or that doesn't exist. It's just that they're not interested. Yeah. So, therefore, they learn up to that much. So then you'll see them, when Gopakumar went to Mahakalapura, he sees them all there sitting in the Brahma Jyoti. You know, that brightness like that, you know, in their brightness. So Brahma Jyoti's white, they're white, everything's white. You know? And it's so effulgent, they can't see themselves. He can see because he has that knowledge. Right? It's just like in the Ishvapanishad, then the Lord's effulgence is there. You can't see him, but by his grace, you know, then you can see. So because of that devotion, he can even see the guys merged in Brahman. And he sees their forms. They're not merged as jivas, you know, just 1/10,000 of the tip of the hair. They have their form, their human form. They're sitting there in Brahman. But they are all meditating on Brahman. They don't know they have a form. They don't know all this stuff. They don't know Gopakumar's walking by and going, wow, okay. Okay? Okay. It will be said after the prayers, thus I have replied to the question you asked me. O King, concerning how the mind can have access to the absolute truth, which is indescribable by material words and devoid of material qualities. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:87:49. This refers, really, so the verses aren't so big. Is it? I'm going to get... So the commentaries are what's really big. I always thought it was just a big chapter. Okay, questions, then the prayers. Okay, and then a few of the duties of the translator, just a conclusion. Okay. This refers to being able to understand the qualities of the Lord not revealed in the 28 verses recited by the Shrutis. What to speak of understanding the qualities revealed there. Right? So the mind can understand what's there and what's beyond by the Lord's grace. Right? It is said in the first canto, Ete Chanye Cha Bhagavan Nitya Yatra Maha Gunaha. These and other qualities are eternally present in the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:16:29. Since those qualities are eternal, they are spiritual. It was stated previously that the Shrutis prove Bhagavan. One should also say that they do this directly. Otherwise, how could they be called the most auspicious? Right? So it's not that they're doing it just by negation, by indirect. They're also doing it directly. Right? Because if you just get rid of things, that's not considered auspicious. So when you do the positive, that's when it's auspicious. Like, when you clean the room, you don't call it auspicious. It's when you start putting the banana trees and sprinkling with Ganga water and put the cow dung. You understand? Now, it's not dirty, but it's not auspicious. Auspicious is when it's possible. Right? So, how could they be the most auspicious, the Shrutis, if they're only negating? They are also accepted as self-proven, and their truth is demonstrated in the Bhagavatam. Thus both parties, and especially you, knowledgeable of the greatness of the Lord's name and form, should respect the Vedas as direct evidence. Right? So it's not indirect. Because some will say, oh, it's this, that, and no, the other. No, it's direct evidence. Otherwise, I would not ask the question. I ask, by what method do the Vedas directly speak about Brahman? Please tell me that method. Right? So he's accepting the personal, he's accepting that the Vedas like that. So, but just say, how do they, by what method do they do this? Right? So we see is there's not a lack of faith in the Vedas. It's not that when a doubt is formed, then one's faith in the Vedas. No, he just sees a doubt, how to properly approach this. What is the method and how it's done? Right? Mm-hmm. This is resolved by Sukadeva in the second verse. The Lord created intelligence and the senses for understanding the Vedas. Matrartam, which know the Lord's qualities and activities beyond the goodness. For the jivas who are of great variety and give rise to humans who are merged with Prakriti into the Lord during Mahapralaya. He created the intelligence and senses for the jiva's prosperity so that they can attain enjoyment on planets up to Brahmaloka, for revealing the nature of jiva and for understanding the nature of Bhagavan, who is devoid of the functions of maya. Right? So that's why you have the intelligence and senses, is to do that. Means you can enjoy within the 14 planetary systems, you can come to the understanding the nature of the jiva, come to the liberated planet, and then you come for understanding Bhagavan. That's the whole process. Because we see that if you come up to any one of those first two, you still remain, you do not know Bhagavan, and you remain within the material world. Right? So since the purpose of the Vedas is to solve the problem of birth and death, that means you have to come to Bhagavan realization. So, yeah. Previously it was said, Yam Sarve Veda Namanti. All the Vedas offer respects to the Lord. The meaning is this. In order to maintain the Vedas, the Lord created intelligence and senses for the purpose of bhava, etc. He made the intelligence and senses suitable for understanding the Vedas and for understanding the Lord. Right? So the human intelligence has that capability that it's useful suitable for understanding the Vedas and the Lord. That means it's suitable to take up the process by pleasing the Lord. It's revealed. Right? Because it's the process is there. You follow that, it works. Right? Shivananda Sen's dog followed the process. He went back to Godhead. Right? Does that make sense? But in general, generally dogs aren't inclined towards the process. Right? Like that. But by the association of the Lord, then that happened. You know? Does that make sense? Or we see the fish with Ramanuja. They ate prasad, Mahaprasad. So they went back to Godhead.
Even Lord Chaitanya's pet dog, he went back to Godhead.
Yes. Yes. So the whole point is that the human intelligence is such that it can be there. So by association, then it works. Mm-hmm. The Shrutis, by their nature, also purify the intelligence and senses by being heard. Just as mantras, by their nature, have inherent powers. Okay, so you have the intelligence senses. They have the are suitable. So by hearing, then from bona fide sources, then that's what purifies them, make them brings them to the point where they can appreciate, right? Because when they're proper, then the Lord will reveal Himself. The Upanishads, by their nature, possess shakti of abhidha, or conveying direct meaning of the Lord by their words, since they are empowered by one portion of the Lord. Right? So they have that abhidha shakti. That's why it's brought out. It's very important. So that direct meaning. Because the Vedic language appears to be quite poetic and all that, but it's actually quite direct. If you understand the philosophy, then you understand it's talking about these direct things. It may be using these poetic terminologies and stuff that you could use in that way, or how they put it together. But the point is that it is giving a direct meaning. Right, so they have their main verses that may be, you know, the most direct, and then all the other verses are following that. So the direct meaning is then gained. Okay? The Karmakanda portions of the Vedas possess the power of performance of the Lord's orders, being empowered by another portion of the Lord. These two powers are again of two types. The power supported by qualities of the Lord's Maya, and the part supported by qualities of His Sarup. His Maya qualities are inferior to those of His Sarup. Right? So then the karma, when you're following karma because of Maya, that would be inferior to your following karma because of the qualities of Krishna in His Sarup. That's transcendental. That would be bhakti. Right? So in other words, the power to be able to perform the Lord's orders, then one is doing it for material purpose. Like the Lord's given the orders, you do that, you get the material things you want. The other follows the orders to please Krishna. So one's based on his Swarup, one's based on Maya. Okay? Okay? Srila Sanatana Goswami writes, though the Lord is beyond the senses and mind, being Adhokshija, when persons perform bhakti, by the mercy generated by bhakti, the person contacts the Lord's personal shakti, and he becomes visible to the eye of understanding persons. First, the answer is given. The Shrutis can describe Krishna because of their devotion. There is no other way, right? Because even though they may be the Veda personified, but it's because of their devotion they can define the Lord. Right? Because we see as people without devotion, if they study the Vedas, they can't see the Lord. Right? So even though the words of the Veda are about the Lord, still you have to have that proper consciousness. Okay? There is no other way. Then, starting in verse 13, using the example of bards waking a king, Sanaka and other sages describe the bhakti of the Shrutis and elaborately answer the question posed by Narada previously. Right, so this is Sukadeva Goswami. and Prikit Maharaj, right? Then they're referring to something with Narad Muni. Then they're talking about, you know, then what the sages are going to say. And then the Shrutis are expressing, you know, like this. Sukadev describes the prayers of Shrutis, which glorify the Lord, and in doing so, explains the cause of the Shrutis being able to describe the Lord. So when he describes them describing the Lord, then from that you understand how they're able to describe the Lord. Those Shrutis dedicated to the Lord, primarily Narayan Upanishad and Gopal Tapani, are able to describe Bhagavan directly with great devotion. Really, Narayan Upanishad, that's why it's so... Okay, that's why it's so prominent. The verses of Agamas and Puranas following after these two Upanishads also deal with Bhagavan. Okay. Yeah, so generally it means we use both. The Gopal Tapani, you know, is more the, you could say, we use for the Agama aspect. The philosophy is there, and then the Agama, because it's about Krishna. And then for the Narayan Upanishad, it's generally just we're using for the philosophy of it. I haven't seen so much that we use the Agamas coming from the Narayan Upanishad. Does that make sense? No? Agamas? No. Agama means that which comes from. So the Agamas are the varieties of ways of worshipping the Lord.
As we have the Pancharatra Agama.
Yeah, Pancharatra's Agama. Vaikanasa's Agama, you know, the Tantra's Agama, so Gopal Tapani, then from that comes the Tantra, like this. So, does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore we see in here, Narayan Upanishad, Gopal Tapani Upanishad. So then we, specifically then the Gopal Tapani, that's, we'll have the most connection with. But we see our Acharyas have given us Narayan Upanishad. Like that, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, then in his, I think it's the introduction, then he's quoting from Narayan Upanishad. And he gives the Narayan Upanishad as part of the things that you would chant is for auspiciousness, but also to understand, because Narayan Upanishad basically establishes that there's Narayan and everything comes from Narayan. There is nothing else. Does that make sense? Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, in answering King Parikit's question, Sukadev Goswami replied that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has created the mind, senses, and living force of the living entity for the purpose of sense gratification and transmigration from one kind of body to another, as well as for the purpose of allowing liberation from the material conditions. In other words, one can utilize the senses, mind, and living force for sense gratification and transmigration from one body to another, or for the matter of liberation. Means it's there, you can use it, it's a natural progression. So you can do either, whichever. The Vedic injunctions are there just to give the conditioned souls the chance for sense gratification under regulative principles, right? Because that will gradually bring... If you perform the regulative principles for sense gratification with attachment, then you'll get the pious results of that and get your sense gratification. Right? If you try to get sense gratification without following the Vedic version, you may seemingly get some sense gratification. But the problem is because of the impiety, then it will create restrictions in the future. Right? In other words, you follow restrictions now, you get the facility. You just go for the facility, in the future you'll be restricted. In other words, facility and restrictions go together. So if you take the facilities first, you'll get the restrictions afterwards. Right? Yeah, and not voluntarily. Right? Yeah.
Like the astrological books, they say that when Shani is in the best position for Shani is this and this. Okay? But it happens to be that position is the one that kills romance and a super duper happy married life. So the practical astrologers say, oh, this is very bad, it's extremely bad for your married life. Look at the book, they say that this is the perfect position. The human life is not meant for this particular sense gratification on the human platform. So you restrict it here and they go up and have it much more.
Okay. Oh, okay. The idea is that they can go to the heavenly planets or you restrict and get out of here. So either way. I didn't realize there was such a thing as super duper family life.
Yes.
I mean, we've heard about it. It's like what Prahlad Maharaj says, Shruti Sukha.
Shruti Sukha, yes.
I didn't know that there was such a... Okay. Yes. What were you saying?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. So you restrict yourself, but with attachment, you'll get the results of karma. You restrict yourself without attachment, doing exactly the same activity, you'll get liberated. Mm-hmm. Now you restrict yourself without attachment to please Krishna, you'll get bhakti. So that's the thing. For those who are the theistic community, they all accept the Veda and therefore then follow it. Now it's just a matter of what they want from it. Do they want karma, do they want jnana, or do they want bhakti? But the activities are the same. Because you see, those who are in mode of good, it's always restricted. But the lifestyle will be the same. But there is extension for those in passion and ignorance, just so them to accommodate, you know, basically. But their particular needs. Is that, yeah? The Vedic injunctions are there just to give the conditioned souls the chance for sense gratification under regulated principles, and thereby also to give them the chance for promotion to higher conditions of life. Ultimately, if the consciousness is purified, one comes to his original position and goes back home, back to Godhead. Right? So if you say back home, home is where you're from. Right? If we've never been there, you won't call it home. And you wouldn't say back home. Or you'd say, you know, to go to home, to Godhead. No, we would say back to home, back to Godhead. Because the problem is, you know, because that's the whole thing. It's home, and that's where Krishna is. So then, you get those two together. But, you know, you can make mistakes. So here we are. The living entity is intelligent. One therefore has to utilize his intelligence over this mind and senses. When the mind and senses are purified by the proper use of intelligence, then the conditioned soul is liberated. Otherwise, if the intelligence is not properly utilized in controlling the senses and mind, the conditioned soul continues to transmigrate from one kind of body to another simply for sense gratification. Another point clearly stated in the answer of Sukadeva Goswami is that it is the mind, senses, and intelligence of the living entity that the Lord created. It is not stated that living entities themselves were ever created. Right? So that the living entity is eternal. But intelligence, mind, senses, and intelligence of the living entity. So you have the subtle, then that creates the gross, because that has to manifest. That's all created by Krishna. The living entities aren't created by Krishna, because they're already part and parcel of Krishna. Right? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Just as it is not stated that living entities themselves were ever created, just as the shining particles of the sun's rays always exist within the sun, the living entities exist eternally as part and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But just as the sun rays are sometimes covered by a cloud, which is created by the sun, so the conditioned souls, although eternally existing as parts of the Supreme Lord, are sometimes put within the cloud of the material concept of life, in the darkness of ignorance. So then even this then explains what before is where the ignorance comes from. It's the cloud that covers the living entities. Right? But that's created by Brahman. Right? The sun creates the clouds. The whole Vedic process is to alleviate that darkened condition. Ultimately, when the senses and mind of the conditioned being are fully purified, he comes to his original position called Krishna consciousness, and that is liberation. So when we talk about that you either have material life or liberation, we mean you become Krishna conscious, that's liberation, right? He comes to his original position called Krishna consciousness, and that is liberation. The other liberation in between, the temporary without devotional, we don't really count that as liberation. But Vacharya doesn't, he said devotion, what Prabhupada mentioned, that's real liberation. The other you can call it liberation, but that's not real liberation. You know what I'm saying? You know, like an ambassador is not a real car. You know? Yeah?
Like Rasleela, Prabhupada mentioned that, it's mentioned, gopis became one with Krishna. Prabhupada explains that the gopis became one with the desire of Krishna. As yes. they wanted, they did. That is called being one.
Yeah, because then the mind, the intelligence, the senses are directly connected with Krishna, how it is pleasing to Krishna. So that's what we're trying to get to. That's why we always speak on this thing where we have other upadis. You know, Prabhupada's always talking on that. We're not American, we're not Indian, we're not Russian, we're not this, that, and all these things. So if we maintain those and from that then base other things, so because of that praman that I'm you know, this upadi, and because of that now I create so many situations and rituals and understandings, then the point is how do you ever gain that oneness with Krishna's mood? You won't, because does Krishna ever think that he's, you know, one of these places? Right? When he says he may identify with Braj, do you ever hear him say Bharat ki jai ho? Bharat mata ki jai. Yeah? No? No. So that's the whole point. He identifies with the Braj bosses. Because that's all based on devotion. Okay. The Vedic process is to promote the conditioned soul gradually from the mode of ignorance to the mode of passion. From the mode of passion to the mode of goodness. In the mode of goodness, there is sufficient light for understanding things as they are. For example, from earth a tree grows, and from the wood of the tree fire is ignited. In that igniting process, we first of all find smoke, and the next stage is heat, and then fire. When there is actually fire, we can utilize it for various purposes. Therefore, fire is the ultimate goal. Similarly, in the gross material stage of life, the quality of ignorance is very prominent. Dissipation of this ignorance takes place in the gradual process of civilization from the barbarian stage to civilized life. And when one comes to the stage of civilized life, he is said to be in the mode of passion. Right? We're thinking, yeah, see, barbarian to civilized. And they say, yeah. And so then we identify with that one. And then, and when it comes to this, that he's said to be in the mode of passion. And it's like, oops. In the barbarian stage, or in the mode of, because that's the whole thing. We're civilized, we're a different culture, we're a different this, our background and that. So that's mode of passion. Not goodness, not pure goodness. Mode of passion. Right? In the barbarian stage, or in the mode of ignorance, the senses are gratified in a very crude way. Whereas in the mode of passion, or in a civilized life, the senses are gratified in a polished manner. But when one is promoted to the mode of goodness, one can understand that the senses, the mind, are engaged in material activities only due to being covered by perverted consciousness. When this perverted consciousness gradually transformed into Krishna consciousness, then the path of liberation is opened. But if one's saying, no, but if we become more refined and more presentable to the public and everything, we're using passion and we're going to attract them from their mode of ignorance and passion to pure goodness. How does that work? When this perverted consciousness is gradually transformed into Krishna consciousness, then the path of liberation is opened. So it is not that one is unable to approach the absolute truth by the senses and mind. The conclusion is, rather, that the senses and mind and intelligence in the gross stage of contamination cannot appreciate the nature of the absolute truth. But when purified, the senses, mind, and intelligence can understand what the absolute truth is. The purifying process is called devotional service of Krishna consciousness. So that's the whole thing, is that the more pure it is, then the more it works. The more it's mixed, then the less it works. Because we're mixing it with what? That passion of ignorance. So we're trying to avoid that. You understand? So that's why these fineness are giving and about the upadis. Not that we don't use them, but the point is from the mode of goodness, then you see things in a clear light. Then you can see, okay, what kind of body I have. Right? When we're in passion, why don't we like varnashram? If we're in the mode of passion from that angle of vision, what's the problem with varnashram? Okay, it's restrictive, and so then, yes, you can't, in the senses and all that.
You cannot enjoy to the fullest.
You cannot enjoy to the fullest. But now, what's the enjoyment in this case to the fullest? It means if we're using ignorance, passion, and goodness, you know, by what we were describing here, then what becomes a major stumbling block with the varnashram system?
Nobody wants to be a shudra.
No one wants to be a shudra because of prestige. You understand? Because the idea is I'm going to enjoy to my fullest if I'm, you know, good prestige, like in the Gita is talking about. You know, the family is aristocratic, I'm surrounded by aristocratic relatives, I've gotten rid of all those who are giving us problems, you know, we're rich, we're famous, we're going to enjoy. So this aspect of position is very, very important. And then we're thinking that that's what's going to make devotional service. So the varnashram, then it won't give position, right? Because if you're opposed to the varnashram, then there's a good chance you're not very well situated in the system. Or if you are, then that's called a naradama. Either way, not looking good. You know what I'm saying? So if you would be a dvija, but you're opposed to the system, that makes you a naradama. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not going to work out good. You know, because the other one restricted the senses and everything like that. So then the problem comes is that that will be the motive. And then we're saying, no, but we have to, you know, elevate and become more sophisticated, a better presentation and everything. But all this is just motive passion. Not that it's not valuable in Krishna consciousness, but what we're saying is, what's the motive? You can say, no, but these are all good Prabhupada talks about. But why does Prabhupada talk about them? From the point, we're the soul, we're not the body. Therefore, the body is to be engaged in Krishna service. What do we want for Krishna? Right? The nicest things, right? Therefore, we'll keep the body clean, we'll dress it nicely, we'll feed it properly, we'll act properly, because others are on the bodily platform, so if you take your body and use it properly, others will then find it to be nice. So it's not about social position. It's about that actual knowledge and understanding of my relationship with the Lord. And so that's the approach. And so since they like things that are sophisticated, we're sophisticated. But the Vedas are not sophisticated. Right? We have to remember that in Europe, all the culture and all that, all the spices, all these, they came from this side here. You know? They don't come from there. It means the only thing that I think locally that actually comes from there that's considered high class is truffles. Right? That's from there. And that, in the natural state, is pig food. Right? So it appears the pigs have a good palate for a variety of things, right? Because they eat truffles. Right? And this is not the city pigs, these are the wild pigs, right? You know, the ones out in the forest. City pigs have a little bit less refined. Like that. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty, is that all these things, the refinement, come from this. Silk, it does not come from Europe. In no history book anywhere will everyone claim silk comes from Europe. It comes from the East. Right? And so that's fine and all that. Where does cashmere come from? Not Scotland. Right? Like that. I mean, unless you're going and catching the barbarians there, shaving their red beard, and then making a blanket out of it. Okay. Then, you know, but I don't think they call that cashmere. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, The point is all these refined things come from over here. They don't come from there. They may be intelligent, know how to use them, but we'll even say that's because those people originally came from here. Right? When Parasaram did his tour, then those who could escape, the Kshatriyas, they fled towards Europe. Therefore, that thing of refinement and opulence and enjoying and the mode of passion and all that, that's why it's so prominent in that European culture. Because it's coming from India. Somebody did, when the DNA was first coming up and they could kind of figure it out, then somebody did a test between the, the European genes and I think Andhran Brahmins. And they found it super close. Now, if they had taken Andhran Kshatriyas, then it probably would have been a direct match. But they don't understand that aspect. But they just found that they had that nature of that the higher aspect of society. You know, they weren't connected with the Dravidians or like this kind of thing. So that's the kind of aspect that was there. Does that make sense? So the point is it still all comes back to here. And so anything that's there, just that they have that desire, that passion, all that still comes from here. Right? Does that make sense? So the whole point is that we, therefore, from the mode of goodness, work on what we have. We don't worry about all these other things. We worry about this is what we're given. This is what the Shastra says. This is what our Acharyas say. This is then what we do. And based on that, that's why we keep everything nice and clean and that. We talk about sophisticated, but one of the first principles of sophistication is cleanliness. You go into an aristocratic person's house, the first thing you'll notice is it's clean. Right? It's not about the marble and this and that. It's about it's clean. Because if you have marble, it's not clean. It's not that fancy. Right? It's clean. So that's the first thing. So if you want to be sophisticated, make your temple clean. Not when you walk in that little foyer that's there, then that's where they put all the junk. No. Clean. You understand? So that's the whole point, is that this point of coming up to the mode of goodness, from there to be able to function, that's the best position. Passion and ignorance are not good positions. And to use the intelligence and senses from there, you will always come up with some problem. If you use it in goodness, then you can see in a clearer light. When you see it in connection with devotion, now that's the proper goal. Mechanics will be the same. The mechanics of goodness and pure goodness are the same. The basic principle of knowledge of the soul, the material, is the same. The difference is pure goodness means it's not done for any material motive, and it's done to please Krishna. Well, goodness means there may be material motive. Right? Some sense, yeah. In the Bhagavad Gita is clearly stated the purpose of Vedic knowledge is to understand Krishna. And Krishna is understood by devotional service, beginning with the process of surrender. The purpose of studying the Upanishad, alright, so you surrender and then it works. It's like Shankaracharya said. First surrender, then, you know, first take sannyas, then we'll talk. You know? So first surrender to Krishna, then we'll discuss. You surrender, then it's all revealed.
Like that. Lord Chaitanya is more merciful than Krishna because he doesn't even demand surrender. Lord Chaitanya is more merciful than Krishna because he doesn't even demand surrender.
Lord Chaitanya's mood is?
Is more merciful than Krishna.
Is more merciful than Krishna because he doesn't demand surrender.
Yeah.
Okay. And how will you relate this to this point here?
Just glorifying Lord Chaitanya.
And this is the point where we should be glorifying Lord Chaitanya?
Mm-hmm.
By glorifying Lord Chaitanya, do we distract from the point being made?
Yes, yes.
And so then what's the point of distracting from the point? So in other words, it's a nice thing. Then you have to say it. Then it's, you know, like this, and so it's there, so that's surrender. But does Lord Chaitanya expect at some point there's surrender? He never expects any surrender. Anytime. So it didn't matter what any of his devotees did, how they acted, or anything. So in other words, to take up the process, to be engaged in devotional service, then there's no condition. But once you take it up, if you want prema, then there's some rules. Right? So in other words, Krishna will only reciprocate as you surrender. So if you don't make no step, can't do anything. That's why Advaita Acharya is making the point, as the super soul, as the Mahatattva, that there's nothing he can do because no one's surrendering. So he has to call Lord Chaitanya, who is Krishna in the mood of the devotee. So the devotee will go out and give devotional service to people who haven't surrendered, who have no qualification. In other words, they'll give them prasad, they'll hear the holy name, they'll do all these things. Right? Okay. But once it's there, is there not yama and niyama and all these, if you want to advance? To take it up, then there's none. Okay? So when we're talking about the purifying process here, then we're talking about we have to regulate, we have to everything. So why throw out that Lord Chaitanya is so merciful at this point? Because then what will be the next thing? Oh, so we don't have to worry about all this regulation and all that because Lord Chaitanya is there. So now I can, again, do just whatever I want. You understand? So that's, he's so merciful that you can start off doing whatever you want, but you have to know that that position is not a developed position. So that's the thing. In the Veda, if you want to take up, let's say, deity worship, what qualification do you need? Right. Okay, what about doing yajnas? You know, what about doing... So you need so much qualification. But now devotional service, you can take it up, get started getting the benefit, and you have no qualification at all. Right? Like that. So... That's, you know, Lord Chaitanya says, you know, anybody can do it. You know, adult can do, the child can do, a dog can do. You know, that's where we come in, right? Yeah. So that's the whole point, is we all have our connection. And so that's there. But if you're not careful, if you give the wrong thing at the wrong time, then they'll take it that, oh, I can remain a dog and, you know, everything's perfect. You know, so where Shivananda sends dog, in the spiritual world, the dog? No, he got a forearm form, went back to Godhead, right? Right? What about the fish? It's just a big fish went flying through the sky. No, forearm form. What about the bird that was shot by the hunter and went flapping around this bush three times? And then got forearms and went back to Vaikuntha, because in the bush there was a Shaligram. And what about those trees hugged by Lord Chaitanya? What about the dog? The puppy?
They don't have dogs. Trees.
Yes, but do you want to be the dog there?
No.
You know? I mean, that means that department's already taken care of by wrappers, so you don't have to worry. They're already. Right? Yeah. Okay? So, in other words, just because words can be connected, intelligence can be implied very nicely, and one can come up with these different things, that unless you can present it in context of here, then it's not vichar. It's actually a distraction from what we're discussing. So you have to, you know, in other words, just because the intellect can put all this together, and it's true, but you have to be able to put it so it adds to the conversation, not distracts. Does that make sense? Yes. So, the point is one can take up. What we see is that the Vedic literature restricts so that you start getting that better and better and better. Right? The Brajbasis just do anything? They do something very specific. It's always 100% about Krishna. That's why it's Braj. Right? It's always sweetness. It's not, it's, there's no majesty. You want to add some majesty? That's called Dwarka. You want to add more majesty? It's called Vaikuntha. Right? Does that make sense? If you're mad after majesty, that's called the material world. Does that make sense? Yeah, so like that, it works. So in other words, very good point, but just wrong topic or wrong presentation. Yeah, okay. The purpose of studying the Upanishads is to understand the transcendental qualities of the Absolute, as opposed to the material qualities of ignorance, passion, and goodness. That is the way of Vedic understanding, because we have to remember that this is from Krishna book. That is the way of Vedic understanding. Great sages like the four Kumaras, headed by Shanaka, followed these principles of Vedic knowledge and came gradually from impersonal understanding to the platform of personal worship of the Supreme Lord. It is therefore recommended that we must follow the great personalities. Right? Because what they did, that's what we do. That's the whole point. So as they are giving Krishna consciousness to anyone, we're also doing that. But that doesn't mean we have to become like them to do that. Right? Does that make sense? It means, I say, everyone means Jagai and Madhai became devotees. Did Haridas Thakur and Nityananda Prabhu, you know, dress up like Jagai and Madhai, wrapped a gumsha on their head and went out there? And,
no.
They lived their lifestyle, went out and preached. And from it, yes, sometimes people don't react properly. And then because they just see, we can't dress like this. No. Because even you dress like that, okay, all these people in the city are dressed the way, you know, we're saying is the bona fide way to dress in the Western circles. By them walking down the street, does anybody remember Krishna? Think of Krishna. Do anything about Krishna? No. We walk down the street, then they'll think. Or they may go, oh, Hare Krishna. They may like, they may not like, but they remember Krishna. So that's the point. Jagai Madai is there. They didn't like, but they became devotees. Because the point is, someone in ignorance doesn't like anything. Why is he walking down the street? Because he has to go to work. Does he want to go to work? No. When he's at work, does he like his work? No. Does he like anybody else at his work? No. Does he like his boss? No.
He likes the money.
He likes the money. That's the only reason. So all that that he's doing, then... So that's the whole point, is that there's no such thing. You can't please someone in the mode of ignorance. You can engage them in devotional service. Engage their senses. Give them a nice prasad. Sukadeva Goswami is also one of the great personalities, and his answer to the inquiry of Maharaj Parikit is authorized. One who follows in the footsteps of such great personalities surely walks very easily on the path of liberation and ultimately goes back home, back to Godhead. Right? Because there's a path, so you have to be on the path. Right? You can start from anywhere and take it up, and you're on the path. That's the fun part. Doesn't matter where you are, you're off the path. You don't have to come over to the path. Wherever you are, if you start following, that becomes the path. Right? That is the way of perfecting this human form of life. It's also interesting is that the previous chapter then had that aspect of Krishna going with the sages and you're establishing the authority of the sages. And one of those sages that was with him was Sukadeva Goswami. Yes. And so now we see is that that authority then is being, you know, has been established, and so now then we follow that. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "Those who came before, even our ancient predecessors, meditated upon this same confidential knowledge of the absolute truth. Indeed, anyone who faithfully concentrates on this knowledge will become freed from material attachments and attain the final goal of life." So, there was someone who meditates on this knowledge that is being asked about how to understand the transcendental, even though you have only material facilities. Right? Then those who have concentrated on that, had this knowledge, practiced it, then they all attain the final goal of life. Mm-hmm. Right? So he's saying that going back to the ancient predecessors. Mm-hmm. Right? So then we have, you know, our position, then we have the acharyas which are before us, then we have the ancients. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you're talking about going beyond just our cycle of the yugas. Mm-hmm. Right? When you go into there, then you're talking about other ages, other millenniums, other manvantaras, like that. And so those, then, you know, it's been meditated on by them. Mm-hmm. Right? And then that's being discussed in our contemporary environment, you know, and been given to us. It comes to us, that ancient knowledge, through our acharyas. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, he proves his previous statement and praises the knowledge. The two previous verses, sa, a question and answer, became an Upanishad. By the two verses, an Upanishad appears. This Upanishad was not recently produced, however, because this knowledge was held by the Kumaras, who appeared before Narad and others in their hearts. Right? So this Upanishadic knowledge, then that was already gained before, because Upanishadic knowledge is understanding the absolute truth. You know, what the Vedic knowledge seen according to the absolute truth. Right? So this discussion, that's Upanishad. So these two verses then become Upanishad, but this didn't come from them. He's saying that this came from the Kumaras. Right? And so Narad Muni is asking this question. Right? Because Kumaras were first.
Yeah. They were doing it on general question. They were doing it on general about the discussion.
They were?
During the discussion.
During the discussion?
On
Janaloka? On Janaloka, yes, yes. Yes. But yes, so the whole point is it keeps going back. Okay. So in other words, this is one of the original discussions that is there in the universe. You know, that's why the wording is. What was that? Yes. The question as old as time. So in other words, the Kumaras are asking right at the beginning. So, yeah, it goes back. Sukadeva Goswami continued. In this connection, I will relate to you a narration concerning the Supreme Lord Narayana. It is about a conversation that once occurred between Sri Narayana Rishi and Narad Muni. Once, while traveling among the various planets of the universe, the Lord's beloved devotee, Narada, went to visit the primeval sage Narayana at his ashram. From the very beginning of Brahma's day, Lord Narayana Rishi has been undergoing austere penances in this land of Bharata, while perfectly performing religious duties and exemplifying spiritual knowledge and self-control. And all for the benefit of human beings in both this world and the next. There, Narada approached Lord Narayana Rishi, who was sitting amidst sages of the village of Kalapa. After bowing down to the Lord, O hero of the Kurus, Narada asked him the very same question you have asked me. As the sages listened, Lord Narayana Rishi related to Narada an ancient discussion about the absolute truth that took place among the residents of Janaloka. Right? So, he's telling him, you know, that your question is there. As Jiva Goswami points out, it has that form of the Upanishad. But that's not, it's not, how you say, originating there. He's then quoting from Narayana Rishi with Narad Muni, who then Narayana Rishi is telling the story of the discussion on Janaloka. Right? So, yeah. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Narayana Rishi has been undergoing great penances and austerities from the very beginning of the creation to teach the inhabitants of Bharatvarsha how to attain the highest perfectional stage of going back to Godhead. His austerities and penances are exemplary practices for the human being. So when it says the first from the beginning of Brahma's day, then, by Prabhupada's point here, that means the beginning of the day, meaning the first day. Not meaning today's first day. Mm-hmm. Right? You know what I'm saying? But the original first day. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
50 years ago?
Huh?
50 years ago, Lord Brahma. Yeah.
The first day was 50 years ago?
No, you said the first day of Lord Brahma.
His first day. 50 years, or you mean 151 trillion?
Something like that.
Like, yeah, that one, yeah. Yeah, if it was 50 years, then that was, I think that was Sergeant Pepper. But, but otherwise, this then we're talking about Brahma. Right? Because then, you know, you have the manvantaras and everything like that that's going on in one day. So a thousand cycles. So we're talking about the very first day. Right? Okay. Narayana Rishi told Naradaji that the same question Naradaji had raised had been discussed in that meeting on Janaloka. This is the way of understanding through the parampara, or the civic succession. So we're not making it, we're just talking what they're talking. Right? The personality of God had said. Okay, this is... okay, so now this is Sukadeva Goswami describing what Narayana Rishi then said to Lord, I mean to Narad Muni. O son of self-born Brahma, once long ago, on Janaloka, wise sages who resided there performed a great sacrifice to the absolute truth by vibrating transcendental sounds. These sages, mental sons of Brahma, were all perfect celibates. At that time, you happened to be visiting the Lord on Sweta Dweep, that Supreme Lord in whom the Vedas lie down to rest during the period of universal annihilation. Right? So, in other words, these were all mental sons of Lord Brahma, but Narad Muni wasn't there for that discussion. He happened to be visiting the Lord on Sweta Dweep. That's why he didn't hear the conversation. So Narayan Rishi is now relating that conversation. A lively discussion arose among the sages on Janaloka as to the nature of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Indeed, the same question arose then that you are asking me now. Right? And so, just as Sukadeva Goswami says, your question was raised by Narayan Rishi. Narayan Rishi is saying, your question, that the Narad, was raised by them at Janaloka. Yeah. Although these sages were all equally qualified in terms of Vedic study and austerity, and although they all saw friends, enemies, and neutral parties equally, they chose one of their number to be the speaker, and the rest became eager listeners. It just makes for a proper conversation. That's just how it works. Because otherwise, if everybody talks at once, it doesn't work very good. Like that. Yeah? No? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, since there was no difference in their learning, austerity, and character, there were no groups of for, against, and neutral. Although all were qualified to be the speaker, for pleasure, they made one of themselves the speaker. Right? Because it just makes for a pleasant, nice conversation. Like that. Sri Sananda replied, after the Supreme Lord withdrew the universe, Sri Sanandana replied, after the Supreme Lord withdrew the universe he had previously created, he lay for some time as if asleep, and all his energies rested dormant within him. When the time for the next creation, the personified Vedas awakened him by chanting his glories, just as the poets serving a king approach him at dawn and awaken him by reciting his heroic deeds. Wow. So then when they're referring to the sages on Janaloka, and so then they chose Sanandana to be the speaker. Now he's relating, you know, for that question, the discussion of the personified Vedas when they're waking the Lord between the creations. So when they say a question is old as time, it's actually a question before time. Like that. And so when they must be, the prayers that they're offering, these are the prayers they're using to wake the Lord. So we can see why these are, you know, have some, you know, original basis for all other stuff. Right?
Which are again coming actually from Lord only they came.
Yes. But then they're speaking and yeah. The BBT purport summarizes the Acharya's commentaries thusly. At the time of creation, the Vedas are the first emanation from the breathing of Lord Mahavishnu. And in personified form, they serve him by waking him from his mystic sleep. The statement made by Sanandana implies that Sanaka and other sages had asked him the same question that Narada had asked Narayana Rishi, and Maharaj Prickett had asked Sukadeva Goswami. Sananda refers the question back to the example of the personified Vedas themselves in their address to Lord Mahavishnu. Even though, so this is not within, not at the end of the day of Brahma and then that partial creation. This goes all the way back to Mahavishnu. Right? Mm-hmm. Even though the Vedas knew that the Lord, being omniscient, does not need to be informed of his glories, they enthusiastically took this opportunity to praise him, right? Because it mentioned, because they had that devotion. So that's the point we'll come up. He made before. Because they had that devotion in waking the Lord. That's why they could understand these things. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Krishna.